Hello, and welcome to another episode of Outside the Panels with Poet Air.
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Chaz Simons.
Yo! Today we are talking about It Eats What Feeds It. We're going to bite that hand with this atmospheric horror story from Scout Comics. It's the newest installment in our publisher sort of spotlight. We talked about White Ash previously, but today we're tackling this Southern Bayou horror story. Guys, what did you all think about it?
I love this book as a horror story. It reminds me kind of a Victorian slideshow. I really liked it and thought it was very unique. Just kind of the aesthetic.
I really enjoyed the setting in the bayou and that kind of voodoo-y feel. And I really liked the few characters it did had a lot of flavor.
Yeah, for sure. I also agree that the atmosphere of the book, for sure, that smoky sort of the look that the artist goes for really, really sets a tone. And this book, we should mention, is written by Max Hoven and Aaron Crow and illustrated by Gabriel Ayumizark. And it is moody, to be sure. There's a lot of sort of, it's almost like a fog hanging over the entire book, right? Like, for me, I was never 100% certain of what was going on because it felt like there was this sheen of mystery and sort of horror going on over it.
They definitely dragged out kind of showing you what's happening, I feel like, intentionally to build the suspense. They just give you a little bit at a time to reel you in.
The words don't really matter, and the like main moral of the story is good, and I feel like one of the best things about it is it hints it through kind of the imagery. Like through the scenes, like if you reread it, and it is a short read at 3 issues, you see a lot more hints early on of what's going on, and kind of just like the whole like journey that Ken has taken on, and then what it leads to, and then why it's called what it's called.
Yeah, you definitely feel like you're in his shoes, kind of unraveling the mystery with only like the little pieces that you can pick up through the visual storytelling.
Yeah. So just a preface also for anybody who may not have read it yet, you should definitely go and read this because it's only 3 issues long and it's awesome. If you love good, solid horror stories, this is a good book for you. Because like we're saying, it's moody, it's atmospheric, it's got some monsters, both human and maybe supernatural. But it's about a young man who takes a job on a southern bayou as a housekeeper against his better judgment, and is drawn in by the beautiful mistress of the house, if you will, and given a certain set of tasks, including keeping the grounds clean and feeding something in the attic through a big old scary door.
I like when he goes into the kitchen and there's just meat everywhere.
Yeah, it's like
it's like, oh, I'm sorry, I haven't cleaned that up yet. You're like,
place.
What the fuck?
part of me was like,
full of meat everywhere, yeah. Like rib cages.
I was like, is he gonna start punching this shit Rocky style? But like, it's pretty wild, this house. And it's really against his better judgment. I think one of the things that's sort of I won't say held back horror fiction in a way, but there's sort of a meta nature to horror stories now because everyone should live in a world where these sort of stories have existed. And that makes the choices they make seem foolish unless they somewhat say, oh, this is a bad idea. When he first pulls up, what could go wrong? Handyman needed. Oh, it's in a scary bayou. I guess I'll just go. Oh, my car broke down. I guess I'll just go interview instead of leave. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah, going back to those first few panels, I really enjoyed the fact that he himself as a character was stating how cliche.
Yeah.
Of like a story, the beginning of a horror story.
It's the beginning of, yeah. Yeah, it's the beginning of every 80s horror story you know, right there with the breakdown, the capture of the character there. But it's just a lot more unique than you thought it would have been. It's so simple too. It's such a simple story. And then kind of pull it back around
to your slideshow analogy. It sort of has that zoetropic story, right? Like, he knows he shouldn't be there. He knows that he shouldn't keep doing these things, but he's stuck in this circular pattern of watching these things happen. So, yeah, it's kind of very Victorian. I agree.
And he, in turn, in it, I feel like, returns Francois to human, too. Kind of gives her belief in humans again.
I do wonder how much of it has to do with, like, the seductress nature, or has to do with his own morbid curiosity.
Yeah, there's a part of me that is definitely like, if I got this advertisement in the paper and I was hard up on my luck and they're offering room and board and all I got to do is take care of this stuff and I don't even got to look through that door, I just got to push me through it, I might. And Francois is not, I mean, she's drawn very attractively, let's put it that way. So if I lived in this world, would I be tempted? Probably, if I was hard up on my luck.
Yeah, he also seems like, you know, he doesn't have too much going on, and there's like an element of intrigue that he seems to be feeling with like this dangerous, beautiful woman and house and everything.
Yeah, it's that allure of what's behind the door. That mystery of what don't I know? I don't know.
I think the fact he just treats her so humbly at first kind of changes the behavior of how the story could have gone.
Oh, so you're thinking, if anybody out there is like, I got to read this book, you should pause now so that I don't accidentally spoil something for you. So you're thinking that her intention in the handyman ad was, let's get some more bodies to feed this scary monster.
I think that her plan was to use him to just bring more people to feed to the monster.
Oh, I thought you meant it's her plan to feed him to the monster.
Oh no, like, to get
the I need a handyman for that. I'm so wimpy lady. And then, hey, can you go up to the attic and get that thing for me? And then lock the door, bar it down, and then he's like, where's the thing? Blah, torn up by this weird, crazy beast.
See, I had the same kind of thought that got reinforced later by some of the later dialogue, which I don't really want to get into to spoil, but I could definitely see like her intent having gone either way. But as Michael said, the way that he presented himself in the situation could have potentially changed his fate.
Yeah, saved his life in a way.
Precisely.
Just his character, I think, changed her mind about humans, so they're not all bad.
Yeah. Let's talk for a quick minute about the monster. Did you all, from the covers, at least think that the monster itself was going to be some big-ass alligator?
I thought this was going to be a crocodile for sure.
Yeah, I could definitely see a big old fucking crocodile.
And then when that thing appeared, ooh, like, it's got a little bit of element of body horror to it with those tenderly sharp pointies. There's no real discernible features on it. It's just like this weird mass that just feeds. Like, man, talk about good horror monster.
In the first issue, before we actually got like a good look at it, I definitely it was leaning towards werewolf.
Just tons of limbs. You get a good shot of it, but you really don't too.
Kind of like some Louisiana Lovecraftian atmospheric horror shenanigans.
And when we get a little bit of backstory on Francois, I gotta say, those tentacles take on a new weird element, right? Like they're ripping into and tearing apart these hillbillies that have abused Francois due to her, let's say, less than good husband. No, so well, let's just flat out call him a terrible husband that sort of hoard her out. So it's interesting that they get all torn up by the piercing piercing tentacles before they're eaten by this monster in this like really weird sexual reversal. I take it by your all stunned silence that that part didn't enter your office.
No, I mean, I enjoy what you said.
Let's go ahead and backtrack, huh?
I completely agree with you, but I feel like it's also the whole story and metaphor of her for Francois' PTSD with her husband.
She's like extracting her revenge until, I guess, she I don't know if it's more her like reaching a point of contentment or her having more of like an empathy for human life.
Finding a good man has put this beast to rest. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, and I don't think she dances with that monster either.
The items around her house unfortunately didn't sing any songs. That would have been an interesting twist.
Her house did look as dirty as Beast Castle, though. Gotta say. Could have been the atmosphere, too, though.
The dustiness creates that atmosphere.
And also just the misty swamp.
I also attribute it to the swamp. Yeah, like... The bayou is such an interesting place, too, when you think about settings, because there's that weird mix of land and sea coming together in a way that, like, isn't quite either, right? Like, there's just a bunch of hidden danger all throughout it, but there's also a strange beauty to it, which I feel like maybe is a little bit reflected in this story, that there's horror in it. But there's also the Francois in it.
Yeah, I feel like his good intentions kind of allowed him to skate by through a lot of that danger. Like, if he had ill intentions with any of the stuff going on, he probably would have ended up in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, it was because he came and treated her with respect. He was happy for the job.
Yeah, and same with, like the ruffians at the bar and everything.
Man, I was so glad. This is another pause for y'all if you didn't read it, but you paused for the last one and jumped ahead somehow. I was so glad when that dude got eaten. Like, when he gets recruited and brought up.
He's such a douche. And then they're like,
hey, why don't you go on up? And he's just like, hell yeah, baby. And then just is like, donezo. Yes, please. More people like that to get eaten by monsters, 2021. Bring it.
When I read that to her today, I did such a voice for that character because he is so squirmy.
He's a slippery boy, that one.
And Ken still tries to save him because that's when he figures out what's happening.
Yeah, definitely glad he became tentacle food. So what's this this horror movie that you were talking about? We wanted to ask the audience if they could name this strange film for us.
I was not thinking we're going to have just kids to talk about horror in this episode too, just because the kind of the genre that the book is in. But she remembers a movie or TV show that played on FX in the early 2000s that was either a film or like a pilot television series about three teenagers. They were kids?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't teenagers. They were kids. So, like, were, like, elementary school kids?
Middle school, maybe?
Middle school kids. And that one is a chubby kid who's has a relationship with his mother. And there's two other ones, right? One's a nerd? No nerds. One's another boy and one's a girl, right?
No nerds allowed in this mine.
There's got to be one nerd. There's always one nerd in every horror movie crew. The one that's like, push my glasses up. I don't know, guys. I heard a story about this. And then the one jock's like, don't be a fucking nerd. Oh, right. Wait, are we trying to swear?
That's why they thought this story was going to be so controversial.
Yeah. No nerds.
They were trying to break the mold by getting rid of the nerd. Yeah, we're throwing the nerd out. It's 100%. Jocks and cheerleaders.
I have an update. Okay, I have an update. Maybe it'll refresh people. Okay, so there's three main characters. They're boys. They're like middle school age. It starts out with a boy and his grandfather is dying. And when he's dying, he tells them the story about this monster in the mine. Then the grandpa dies. Then there's another boy in town who's beat by his father, and then another boy who has abuse from his mom, and there's a monster in the mine and it's eating people, and there's a detective, right? Mm-hmm. And there's a detective and police, and they're hunting it too, the monster. I do not remember this show. It was either a show or a movie.
I'm going to throw this out there. I love that small town police are like, we got to catch this fucking maybe supernatural monster. But we don't have to do anything about the abuse that those two kids are suffering at the hands of their dad and their mom. Yeah. Like, no. There's no monsters at home. They live in the mine and they eat people. Do you think that your parents are a monster guy? Maybe you need to spend a night in the mine.
Many people thought it was Super 8. I feel like she maybe fell asleep to Super 8 in another movie. She's positive it's real.
Yeah, I don't think anybody got beat in Super 8.
No,
strangely. The girl in Super 8 definitely had a rough home. That's why she was hanging out with the filmmaker kids, because like, oh look, the magic of cinema is my escape also. Maybe that's not what it was, but I feel like that's what I took away from that movie.
So, it eats what feeds it, and Super 8 do have in common the dragging out the actually seeing the monster until the end. But luckily, unlike Super 8, the monster wasn't stupid, and the ending was actually like quite fulfilling.
Yeah, I agree. It eats what feeds it.
Not to bag too much on Super 8.
No, definitely not. Because who knows, J.J. Abrams might listen to this one day. And I would hate for him to be upset with us.
Probably.
So hard to revitalize old ideas. Burn, J.J. Abrams. Suck it.
He'll sick Disney on us.
Yeah, who knows? He's probably very on jizz. But, no, I agree that it eats what feeds it definitely held out its monster reveal for the right moment and gave us just enough without overwhelming us with it. Cause Super 8, that's for real. My biggest complaint with that movie is like the build up, the suspense. Oh, you saw a little bit of that monster arm. Oh, it's so creepy. Oh, okay. Now I showed it to you. Now let me keep showing it to you. Let me leave it on camera for like two solid minutes. And then it's like, now I'm not as scared of it. Cause I know it looks confused and scared too. And not menacing.
It's also just not a very satisfying design for a monster. Like, that's an issue I've always had with the Abrams aliens.
The Super 8 one kind of looked like a spider, right?
They're just not, like, very scary. Right?
Or am I blending Cloverfield and Super 8 together?
Like,
no, it's like a muscular gray with two, like, four arms. And it jumps around like a monster, but it's like a gray. It's like a gray alien.
Yeah, it's kind of like lumpy, weird.
You know
flesh.
What movie had cool monsters that were aliens? Evolution. Do you remember when those like those
That's
apes
a great movie.
Just arrived and they were like scary looking, but like tight? I don't know. Just enough too. They only showed those dudes for like 2 minutes, and they killed people, and then they disappeared, and they broke all the cameras, and I was like, "Whoa, don't go in there, David Duchovny." But Super 8 was like, what's happening? Now Kyle Chandler is going to hang out and just like give a big speech. Hey, it's about letting go. Let your mom's necklace go to that alien to build a new spaceship or whatever. Like, you could have told that metaphor in a better way, Super 8. Sorry, I'm really ripping on Super 8.
It was a good movie, but...
I gotta calm down about the Super 8 stuff.
Okay, so the difference is, Chaz, you're right, because the difference is in It Eats What Feeds It, there is a third act, and that the end of the story that reveals kind of why it's called the whole nature of the story, like what the whole short tale is about, is in the third act and what its title means. Whereas the third act of a lot of Abrams' ideas, or at least in like the Abrams project we're talking about, are kind of not there, or they have great. He has a great idea, but he doesn't really know how to end it.
I liked the fact that that these books, at the end, they still left like that element of uncertainty. You still like are a little bit fuzzy on what it is. You get to see it pretty well, but there still is that element of like mystery. You have to like fill in the blanks a little bit with your own ideas.
Did you dig his Spider-Man? Did it ever end?
Oh, we're talking about J.J. Abrams' son, Spider-Man? I think we might need to save that for another day, because I might have a lot of thoughts on that. Here's what I will say, just briefly. The one thing that I was like, there's no way he could do it. There's no way. There's no way that this could happen. And number one is lens flare. And then he got the lens flare in there. So, like, A plus on keeping your like motifs up in there. But yeah, we might have to save his Spider-Man.
Are you saying that there's lens flare in a comic book?
I mean, like, it could be the artist's choice, but I'm almost certain that like the script said lens flare off of Spider-Man's head or whatever.
It was in the contract. Like, Abrams was like, okay, I'll write these books for you, but you need to include at least one lens flare.
Do you know how to portray that visually? Because it looks like astigmatism when you're looking at headlights. So just put that around something. Anyways. I got thoughts on Spider-Man, but we should save that for we shouldn't put that into this episode.
I have something to say. The second issue of that, and you could tell that like his son wants to write about Spider-Man.
His son wants to write about talking to a manic pixie dream girl. Jack, you could cut this out because it's going to get mean. His son wants to write about how to talk to this girl, and then his dad's like, what if we put it in a comic and we sell it to Marvel? What if it was about Spider-Man's son and he has powers too? Just like you're going to get into movies one day.
The manic pixie dream girl. The manic pixie dream girl, and the fact that he never learns how to web swing in it. Like, is this like, oh, he finds out he's Spider-Man's son?
To be fair.
And then he's Spider-Man.
In this series, Spider-Man only has one arm, and it's probably very hard to web sling that way.
And he's drawn exactly like...
I'm sorry, everybody waiting for the trade of J.J. Abrams' Spider-Man, but it's going to be out 2 years from now because it's taken forever.
What issue is it on?
Four, I think, of you're gonna, five. I don't even know.
So it has one left.
Wait, so he's a one-armed Spider-Man?
2020's been a surprise, huh? Yeah, he loses his arm in a big fight, and it should be cool, but, like, I don't know.
And
he's not really acknowledged, which I guess is neat, but...
It's set in, like, its alternate world, too. Like, it's in its own story they created, so it's not in Marvel continuity, so they can do whatever they want. For some reason, Peter Parker looks like Keanu Reeves, which is strange.
But also, would I have watched Keanu Reeves' Spider-Man in, like, 1997? Yeah. You betcha. 1,000 times, yes.
I would watch a movie now with Keanu Reeves played old Peter Parker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably would, too. I'd probably watch it twice in theaters.
But especially if Keanu Reeves' Peter Parker had the same body count as, like, fucking... as John Wick. It's like a rated R Spider-Man.
Okay, so you're talking like just a no-holds-bar Spider-Man. Like, you fucking commit like crime and you're dead,
Spider-Man
dog.
Strapped with a
here
gat,
you go.
Like, ready to fucking roll.
Instead of his camera all, like, webbed up in the corner, it's a gun, and he just pulls the thread, like...
Not such a friendly neighborhood
coming,
Spider-Man now, am I? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's another one of those characters that it had to be a really different name to bring him on there. DC's been smart. They're hiring good people like John Ridley and all the White Noise guys. Where Marvel, it's like they just have Hickman.
I hate to break this to you, but J.J. Abrams did sign... exclusive.
Not the DC.
Warner
I forgot.
Brothers.
Yeah. He's creating a Justice.
Like, pretty much, he's going to be the DC EU mastermind coming up. And I got to say, if it's got to go to anybody.
Well, as long as he doesn't butcher it like the last three Star Wars, I might have to edit that out so I don't offend people, but...
No, we might. No, bring it up. Let's just get into it.
We might have to edit out a lot. Let's just get into the Rise of Skywalker. Very Google savvy.
Who listens to our podcast likes J.J. Abrams? They probably don't listen to our podcast anymore.
If anybody who likes J.J. Abrams listens to our podcast, please don't tweet at J.J. Abrams that we're saying this stuff about his work. Because, like, just keep creating. That's the important part. Not everybody's going to like everything, and that's okay, you know? Because that's what having taste is all about.
Hey, he did the only good season of Lost, so we got credit there.
Yeah.
He did the pilot. He
we got the strong idea. Opinions going on.
I'm going to highly disagree with this right now. The best...
That was the fastest no, we didn't yet. That was like... Jack didn't even finish saying best season of Lost before Michael came in with no, he didn't.
The best season of Lost. I'm sorry. I have a Lost tattoo on my chest. I'm sorry. I'm a Lost.
Yeah, you do have the Dharma tattoo on your chest.
No apologies, my friend. No apologies.
The fourth season of that show, where Brian K. Vaughan wrote the entirety of the season and it's 11 episodes, is the best season of that episode. The best season.
So
of
wait,
that show.
What happens in that season?
The one with the constant. That's the season where the scientists arrive on the island. Dope. And one is the guy that can see the ghosts, one is the physicist, and then one is the redheaded girl who's the daughter of one of the people from the island. And it's the episode where Desmond gets unstuck in time, like Slaughterhouse-5, and he has to find his constant. There is, I want to talk about shows that ended well, like,
well. It's so hard. I feel like it's so hard to end
Breaking
a show.
Bad. Well, Breaking Bad ended well.
Amazingly. That's still one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yeah, you know what show I wish went on a higher note? The Wire.
I never finished that.
I know. We're going to get a lot of tweets about that probably, but like season 4 of The Wire is the best television I've ever watched, and season 5 is like...
This is the episode where we talk shit about everything we hate and lose half our fan base.
Yeah, right? I was going to say, we're really like, hey, do you like derisive stuff? Because we're full of it. And also,
see,
we
thought we were
going to
talk about this horror book, but really we just wanted to talk shit on everything you love.
Yeah. Anyways, let's go back to that horror book, huh?
Wait, no, I gotta get into this again.
Okay,
Westworld season 3. I feel like that's the biggest drop off for me.
Season 3's out.
Yes, well, yes. Season 3.
To talk some more shit on Westworld.
Season 3 has a lot of big ideas that just drop the ball big time.
Westworld 1, the first season. The first season's incredible. The second season is incredible and has a scene with the Native American through his time at the park, which is like brilliant, Emmy worthy. Fantastic. It's another fantastic season. It's a little bit slower, but it's still great. The third season is just, it starts out and it's just like architecture in LA in the future. There's characters from the show. And then it just goes nuts and becomes Fight Club. And it just, it becomes a story about social messages, but then the characters just start acting ridiculous. Like, Ed Harris...
just fucking tanked it.
The entire third season, you could tell Ed Harris knew it wasn't good. And so he
I
just
feel
did
like
a
Ed Harris
job.
Was only given, like, half the script. It's kind of like... it was like a real The Dead Don't Die. Like... hey, you get the full script, and you only get the scenes you're in. Like, hey, Ed Harris, you're going to hang out with the other Hemsworth brother that's not handsome. Sorry, Luke Hemsworth. If you're listening, I hope you're not very litigious about your
If you guys watched...
it felt like he was only given that.
If you guys watched Arrested Development, like, they were knew they were getting canceled on season 3 and just, like, totally fucked off. And I thought that was great for a comedy show, but I don't see it working
for sci-fi. The sci-fi drama. The sci-fi philosophical drama that is Westworld. What is being human? I don't know. let's just shoot some fucking robots.
Android tropes are played out.
I could not get into that. I love Cyberpunk, but I could not get into that Cyberpunk show on Netflix.
Oh, it was so boring. I got through like 2 episodes. I was falling asleep.
What is good, and what this reminds me of, is the Mike Flanagan shows, The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor. Those are both very, very good and great.
And atmospheric, like it eats what feeds it. See, we made the full circle all the way back around. We did it.
I could definitely see It Eats the Feeds being like a miniseries.
Yeah, I could see it being like a 4-hour-long episode maxi series drama.
Yeah, it would be the atmosphere would just play out so well on the big screen.
Yeah, the tension.
Even as a feature. Yeah.
Yeah, even just like a film.
I don't know.
Because it's a pretty quick story. They could make it into like a longer movie.
I feel like everybody, I don't want to say they phone it in when it comes to films. I always feel like when it comes to an adaptation of a comic, if they have a show, they like expand and elaborate, and they kind of draw it out a little bit. And then when they have a movie, they're like, we only got 90 minutes. What are we going to cut out of this thing? And in this case, those 3 issues don't have anything that you could cut, because if anything, you got to add to it. You know what I mean? But
yeah, I think I'd like to see more like adaptations really just take the extra time instead of trying to cram it all into the standard 90-minute formula. Yeah,
well, I guess like 120-minute, I feel like, is becoming the new standard. But like, I want to get back to 90-minute movies. Yeah, like I'm tired of that. I wanna give my bladder a break. Give me 90 minutes and let's go.
You could make more of it too, about other deals done in this swamp, in that area.
That's what I was gonna say. I would love to see more of that, like crossroads demon that she makes the deal with to come to this monster. Or was that just supposed to be some sort of like Shining-esque representation of this guilt that she's feeling over killing her husband?
Yeah, I was really wondering, like, what other deals this being has transacted in, and, like, what kind of... It's kind of that voodoo feeling of everything comes at a price, you know? There's always some sick twist.
Yeah, if she doesn't feed them, she gets sick and tired. Even if it's other meats, but if she doesn't feed it, people, she dies.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty dark.
It's like something she wants at first, and then it comes at a really heavy price.
I guess that's sort of the nature of revenge, too, right? Like, you really want to, like, take it out on the person that did whatever it was to you, but the minute that you get that chance or that opportunity, and then that moment passes, like, what are you left with, kind of? After she's made her way through all those men that have abused her, can she keep fulfilling this bargain?
Well, that's when, that's what she ends up not being able to do, and that's why she starts starving and trying to feed it, you know, animals. But it wasn't working as well.
Her morality is causing her to have these issues. Like, as she's becoming more in touch with her, like, her more compassionate side,
her humanity,
it's starting to wear down on her soul, but also her physical body.
Yeah, it's almost weird that ignoring the soul and feeding it people results in the wealth and the health, but actually like taking stock of the soul and feeding it animals instead, or feeding it some other form of creature, takes that physical toll on her body. Like, doing the morally just thing results in poor health, whereas like engaging in that revenge or that sort of sadism results in health and wealth. Yeah, I guess that's what happens when you sell your soul to some sort of devil. All of your poles get flipped, right? Like, if she hadn't done that, I'm sure her being like, I'm not going to feed that monster anything but, like, people, then, like, some just deity in this universe would be like, good job. Good job not feeding it human souls that are important to life. Here's some health and wealth. But you feed it people and you're going to get sick and die.
I mean, she she would definitely have to live with, like, torment from... Like, she's got to have some really fucked up PTSD from that piece of shit husband of hers. I don't know if, like, not being able to exact revenge on the people who abused her would have just left her with, like, horrible PTSD alone in a swamp.
Yeah, I gotta say, if it was me, I would take great pleasure in feeding some weird, gross people to a big old monster. Like, there would be no... I'm trying to think of the equivalent of, like, the joy it would bring me to know that that person who had done something so terrible to me had just gotten eaten by some big, crazy shape in my attic.
Now, I'm not going to say that I would, like... I'm not going to say I would feed certain people to a monster, but there's definitely some people that I've met in my travels who I wouldn't mind if somebody else fed them to a monster.
Yeah. Go ahead and make me the weirdo who's like, yeah, I'd love to do that.
Okay, there's some people I might feed to a monster. Okay, I admit it. You got me.
Well, that's what happens with Bug.
Poor, not so poor Bug.
Yeah.
Who did so much to ingrain us in that one issue we meet him. I love this guy. No. The minute I saw him, I was counting down the panels of like, you only got so many left, Bug. You should have stayed at the bar, my friend. You should have just gotten drunk. But no.
They did a great job making you not sympathize.
Greg is probably my favorite of that. I want to see what Greg's story is with this doing this for years, being involved in all these packs.
Oh yeah, he had that super like voodoo man feeling to him. His hat and earrings. I don't know, something about his aesthetic just like sticks out. He looks like an alligator hunter,
like a real Baron Samadii. Samadii. I don't know. Yeah. You know, yeah, that guy.
From Live and Let Die.
So just, right? Totally. Just real quick. Yeah. Just real quick to assuage myself. We could even just show of hands. You don't have to say anything. But just show of hands. Who would feed their tormentors to a monster that you made some deal with a crossroads demon to? Perfect. Thank you, guys. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not alone in that. By the way, we don't have video, so I'm just assuming that y'all had your hands up, because mine was.
I'm assuming that the listeners are going to put their hand up and then be like, yeah, okay.
Good. We're all on the same page. We're good. I guess the moral of the story is, feed your enemies to a monster, if you have one. But make sure that they're like...
If you don't, head down to your local swamp with an alligator hunter.
Do you think as soon as her enemies are done, she dies, though? I mean, because it wasn't the kind of human where she wanted to kill anyone besides her enemies. But with it, she was immortal.
Exactly. I think that was where her morality came to her detriment, was the fact that she wouldn't feed humans to it that didn't deserve it. And there's only so many people who she'd be willing to feed
to it. Here's the thing. I don't think it was a matter of deserve. I think it was just a matter of constant feeding. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think it wanted to just be constantly fed, but she was refusing to continue to feed people who aren't deserving of...
In her mind, hadn't deserved
it. Yeah. I'm sure everyone has their own little features that deserve monster eating, but some more than others.
Yeah. At a certain point, you run out, and it just starts to be the person that parked over the line at the supermarket. Or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure you get to
it. They took two parking spots. They're going to the monster.
Yeah, get to the monster feeding level. But there's a list I'm sure that everybody's got of like, if I had a monster, y'all would get fed to it. Like, there's no doubt that this guy would go to it or this gal would go to it. Let's be equal opportunity. Well,
if I gotta feed someone to a monster, I guess I know a few people.
Yeah.
But then once you run out, are you done? Is just the people that are cutting you at the deli?
100%. Yeah. The minute that my list is done, it becomes like minor annoyance. Like, oh, you cut me? Hey, you know what'd be great? Hey, I've got some like real premium deli meats at my house. Do you want to go check them out? They're up in my attic. Well, I wouldn't tell them they were up in the attic until they were at my house, because
that'd be kind of weird. Say,
they're up in my attic. The people are like, "Oh, so you're gonna kill me?" Like, there's no,
I got
there's
some no middle ground meat there. In my but, attic. Like, just shove it through the slot. You don't even have to look.
Boy, shove my meat through the slot. Way to be PG,
so Jack. That happened anyway.
Yeah,
deli meat. Guy.
Right. Yeah, that makes it better.
Grocery stores are the worst place for that. Because it's the room in grocery stores, the paper hoarding.
Or like the DMV.
The DMV would be terrible.
You go to the DMV and you just bring back like four people to take to the attic.
Disneyland.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You know what's great about the DMV? You could do all this stuff from my house. Do you want to check it out?
I got the DMV website in my attic. No, it's wait great. Times.
Yeah, it's so fast. It's insane. My cousin stole a kiosk, so I just put it up there. So if the cops come by, they won't find it. But you could go up there and use it like no sweat.
We all kind of wish to feed some of the DMV ladies to the to DMV the monster, guys. Not gonna lie,
we'll be equal opportunity.
DMV guys too. No, I don't know why it's just always. It just always seems to be like an old lady who's like really, really slow and condescending.
But then there's those nice ones too.
100%. Yeah. Always about the forms you filled out. So anyways, this is a great horror story. And it'll lead you down some pretty interesting paths. It'll make you question a lot of different stuff, I think. Do y'all have any final thoughts on It Eats What Feeds It?
My favorite scene at the end is after the when the monster consumes her and the blood just kind of flows everywhere. There's
boy,
just
like a Shining, huh?
Yeah. But there's just a scene where he's blown from the mansion and then it falls down in three panels and it's beautiful. Just blood gushing everywhere. And he's just like staring at nothing.
Yeah, for some reason, just like, I was automatically intrigued and then like stuck with me that on the first panel he has circled the number on his newspaper and it's just 666-999. I was like, nice. And then
Ken, the main character?
Yeah.
Oh man. That's so much better than 555 bullshit, bullshit, bullshit.
Yeah, 666-999.
Oh man, what a sexy swamp.
Once again, we've been talking about It Eats What Feeds It. This is a Scout release. You can get it now in its second and third printings at your local comic book shop. You can also get it at scout.com. It is a great little ride. You can always find us, me, PoetAir33 at Twitter. And you can always find you, Jack, where?
You can always find me at Sin Aesthetics, Sin _ aesthetics with an X on Twitter, or Sin _ aesthetic at Instagram, or Sin Aesthetic at SoundCloud. If you want to check out my music, I'll plug that right now. Why not? Yeah, thanks for listening to us shit talk all your favorite directors and TV shows.
Hey, we bumped them up too.
No, we did. I'm just fucking around. Okay.
Should we get into Quantum Leap real quick?
Okay, let's do this.
Or
let's Quantum Leap right in.
Quantum Leap, or the fact that Stargate spawned two, like how many series that were on Sci-Fi?
At least three.
Originally were on public
and
access.
I'm pretty sure they were only watched by dads everywhere. So Michael, if you get really into Stargate, I'm sorry.
I never got nostalgic.
I know, but you're gonna be a dad.
We're gonna talk to him next week, and he's already gonna have watched.
Yeah, like, you're gonna be like
multiple seasons.
You wouldn't believe you. I gotta tell you, you wouldn't believe what Mark Harmon had to say on Stargate. Is it Mark Harmon? No, fuck. Who is it?
No, it's MacGyver.
Yeah, there we go.
I know.
You wouldn't believe what MacGyver had to say on Stargate. He said, "Well, that's no good," and it wasn't any good.
I just never, I'll never forget, I got stuck with my friend Dane, who lived like 25 minutes from my house when I was like maybe 17, 18 in high school, and he was watching that show, and I watched like 6 hours of it with him. That's the only time I ever watched it, and it was terrible.
So there, like, here's the fact check, there are three films and three television series.
There's more than one Stargate film?
There's three. There's Stargate, Stargate the Ark of Truth, and Stargate Continuum. And
I'm looking this up right now.
Two of them were made in 2008.
Those are TV movies, though.
Totally. And then there's three TV shows
that hot Stargate were on for Stargate action.
Progressively less years each series. There was a web series and an animated series, and then several video games, several comic books, and several comics.
So
it's a whole universe.
One of the best things about Stargate that happened, which I did hear recently on another podcast about on Blank Check, is that there was a writer that sued them. It was directed by Roland Emmerich and written by Dean Devlin. And a writer sued them for stealing this idea of the Stargate trilogy. And they ended up settling out of court with him, which usually means they did. And for $50,000, and it made something like 400... How much money did the movie make? And they settled out of court for like 50 grand.
Damn.
How is Dean Devlin not a fucking Evel Knievel-style stuntman? Like, how does Dean Devlin have that name and be like, I'm going to write movies. I'm not going to be in
what
them.
What are you doing, Dean?
I'm going to write
them.
Just
Devlin.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to jump my motorcycle over that canyon, and then I'm going to write Stargate.
I'm going to jump my motorcycle straight into the Stargate.
And out the other side, into fame.
He did Geostorm. That's what we should have watched on the live stream is Geostorm.
So I could watch.
Hey, there's
Gerard
always more live streams.
Save his daughter.
Have you seen Geostorm?
I saw the trailer, so I feel like I think I saw it already. That kind of movie gives everything away in the trailer. What's happening? The fucking Geo is storming. Oh, okay.
I'm just gonna throw this. I'm just gonna throw this idea out here. We could always do some social distanced. Streaming too, if we all just start the movie at the same time, and I
the watch party,
do like a group video chat, yeah, and then I could just use like a screen recorder or screen capture to capture our Discord or Zoom or whatever. Yeah. Okay, so I think we were at the point where we were going to ask Chaz where to find him on social media.
Well, if there's no Geostorm, you can find me on most social media at Chaz Simons. That's S-I-M-O-N-S. If there's two M's, it's Simmons. Just a little bit of knowledge for y'all out there.
Yeah, don't fuck it up. It's disrespectful.
Yeah. You're going to be following some stranger, I got to say, if you put Chaz Simmons in there. I can't vouch for what that guy tweets, but I'm sure it's probably not the quality content you've come to expect from us here at Outside the Panels.
I've heard that's the kind of guy you could feed to a monster.
That's definitely the kind of guy who eats what feeds it.
I already did my social media tag, and then we ranted about we were going to...
The outro's over. That's it. Anyways, check us out on social media. You can find us on Twitter at Outside The. The outside is spelled with a zero at the beginning. And then you could follow us on Twitter and other social media, like we said earlier, at PoetAir33, at Synesthetics, and at Chaz Simons. And make sure you check out our other podcasts that we're a part of sometimes at Nerds From. They just released a new episode that's a real banger from what I've heard. I've got to listen to it still, but there's some pretty exciting things in the work for both us and them. So make sure you give us all a follow, and you can find us on all sorts of great places. You're listening to us already, but spread the love. iTunes, Amazon, SoundCloud, Apple Music, or no, not Apple Music, sorry, Amazon Music. iTunes is already
there. iHeartRadio now, too.
iHeartRadio, that's right, because we do love radio.
Stitcher is the only one. There's a lot more than even Stitcher, but I was asked for Stitcher because someone just listens to stuff on Stitcher.
Stitcher's on there. There we go. We got Stitcher, too. But anyways, that's a good solid outro, huh?
Sounds good to me. What do you always tell them, Chaz?
Wash your hands, and we'll see you next time. Go outside and get some fresh air.
Go on walks. Go on jogs.
Walk straight out those panels.
Be socially distanced. Be good to each other. Have a good night, you guys.